This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insights and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock on Friday, the 10th of July, 2015. My name's Jamie Veitch. I'm your presenter for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting live on 93.2 FM and through our internet live stream. And this show will also be available as a podcast later from our website. In today's show, we have interviews with Penny Raven talking about Sheffield Soup, with Chris Dams, with Ian Anderson, and with James Biggin. Live in the studio, James is talking about his business, Steel City Marketing. And we also have interviews with Olishola McKenzie, the creative director of Learn to Recreate Limited, and Russell Short of Home Team, interviews that we recorded last week. Before we turn to our guests, a couple of upcoming events. Applications for the UK Social Enterprise Awards close today. If you're a social enterprise, if you're listening to this programme, and if you think you deserve recognition, then apply now for the UK Social Enterprise Awards. Free and easy to enter. Find out more at socialenterprise.org.uk. And some of Sheffield's business leaders have condemned plans to halt the rail electrification programme. The chair of Sheffield Chamber of Commerce Transport Forum, Peter Kennan, who's also a partner at Horsens Chartered Accountants, said Sheffield City Region businesses have every right to be disappointed at the announcement made a week and a half ago. A pause has been announced in the electrification plans for the Midland Main Line, but the issue is, how long is that pause? Could the whole project be kicked into the long grass? And what will be the effect on Sheffield? Small businesses have been left to fend for themselves by new flood insurance regulations, according to the Federation of Small Businesses. They're seriously concerned by the exclusion of businesses from the government's flood insurance programme, Flood Re. New draft regulations, which have been laid before Parliament, included provisions for domestic properties, but ministers have decided to exclude small firms. And the regional chairman for the Federation of Small Businesses told me that the regulations cause uncertainty for the 1 in 10 small businesses at risk of flooding. What do you think? You can get in touch with this programme. Email me, jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Text 07904 272 200. Or find us on Twitter, @SheffieldLive. Or find me, @JamieVeitch on Twitter too. Now, of course, big news this week is the budget. If you've got a view on that, we're going to be debating the budget and the effects on businesses, on social enterprise and on individuals. We'll be talking about that next week. You can get in touch. Email your views to me if you want to talk about the issues, then suggest yourself as a speaker too. So that email address again, jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Now, turning now to our first guest, I'm joined in the studio by James Biggin, MD of Steel City Marketing, a leading promotional gift company, which is celebrating 35 years of giving brands exposure. James lives in Dore and loves skiing, squash and mentoring. Do you love squash, James? Interesting game, that would be right. You also mentor an 18-year-old diver as well. Thanks for coming in today. Good morning.
Not a problem. Good morning, Jamie.
So tell me, first of all, James, really interested in this outside of work activity you do. You're mentoring an 18-year-old Team GB diver. Now, how does that benefit your business? I bet it gives you transferable skills.
It's a very informal arrangement, to be honest. My little boy started diving just over a year ago, and he's taken to it like the metaphorical duck to water. He's in the pre-comp squad down at Ponds Forge, and the atmosphere down there is pretty amazing. You've got some amazing young coaches, right up to some very qualified coaches that are obviously leading the talent in diving squads. And we've gotten to know quite a few of the coaches down there, and it's very informal, kind of, how you can apply the business techniques to something like sport, but equally the transferable skills of sport into the business place. I've always tried to kind of sit at the desk and consider how competitive I am on the sports field, on the squash court, and how that applies to my day-to-day. You know, you want to win every day. It's not a cutthroat way of handling it, it's just the standards that you set for yourself. So I think sport and business are quite transferable. I've always believed it, and I think that's why I've genuinely done what I've done in the business community as well.
And it must be rewarding to see the progress of the person that you're working with as well. And
yeah, as I say, I think it is a very informal arrangement. Yeah. It's more kind of tips and chats and how the progress is being made, injuries, how that affects, and it's more of a kind of chat while my little boy is doing his diving, so that we can keep watching him. And, and so that, you know, that's how it's kind of progressed. Yeah, very informal arrangement.
Lovely. So you moved into the family business, James, after your father's co-director was ill and retired. So was it always a plan that you were going to move into the family business, or did you see your future elsewhere?
I left university and didn't want to go into the family business straight away. It might have been a plan in the back of my mind, but I didn't want to feel as I'd been given a gift and that it was a natural progression. I wanted to earn the right, earn the colours, if you wanted to speak that way. But I went in and did some ferroalloy trading out in Dronfield, which was a great little learning curve, very, very harsh sales environment to kind of get your apprenticeship almost as a salesperson. Really enjoyed that experience, met some great mentor type MDs at that firm, and then my father's business partner did become ill, and Dad turned and said to me, "Do you know, it would be great if the time's right for you, the time's right for me, to see what we can do." There were other directors in the firm already, so it wasn't like there was any threat or any risk. It was more of an opportunity, and it just absolutely fell at the right time for me. I'd felt as though I'd progressed as far as I could at the firm, potentially. You can't look back now and say whys and wherefores, but it was a great time.
So circumstances conspired.
Yep.
And it was indeed the right time. So I know that your father's business partner retired just as the recession started, and the company suffered a lot in cash flow, and profitability fell. So this was 2012. So how did you go about turning around the business?
It was actually my dad that retired at that moment. John had retired quite a number of years before that, but my dad's timing was perfect for him.
Right, yeah.
So I think what happened over the 11 and 12 period was that the factors that we were experiencing was we were trying on the sales side, but like every business, we were finding that tough at that period of time. The only things we could really control were what was going on in the business. So I started to look at the costs, how heavy we were on personnel, which is an unfortunate thing to say, but we're a service provider, so our staffing costs are the biggest cost we've got. So we had to look at that. We had to look at things like our brochure, which we'd produced 20,000 copies for 10 or 15 years without questioning whether it gained a return on investment. So I think over that period of time, I cut about a third of the costs out of the business in 1 year, and it transformed the place almost overnight. The profitability came back to what it should be. Not overly, you know, not mega making absolutely millions of pounds, but it was back to where it was. The cash flow was good, and the security for the staff that we retained was safe, and it has been since that period. So it was trying it to see what would happen if losing somebody had a negative effect on the business. It was the wrong decision. If it had no effect or a positive, then it was the right decision, and it was controlling the controllables at that period of time, and it had the effect that we're still seeing today.
And you're still trading today and in business today. So how do you stand out then when there are other businesses offering similar products, similar services in Sheffield? What makes you different? What do you think is the secret of winning clients and retaining them?
So what we try and do, we're very aware that we're in a super competitive industry. What we try and focus on is that level of communication. I've always championed to my clients that I want to feel as though they've got an extra half a team member or a team member that they can bounce off. They can bounce ideas off. We're really up on making sure we've got ideas in front of people as quickly as we can when they're needing to perform at an event or do a campaign or their product launching. So it's heavy on ideas up front. We don't want to steer a client down a path unless they're ready for us to do that. We want them to be clear about their decision making. And I think the level of communication and then into the order, we want to make sure we're kind of the Amazon of promotional merchandise. So they almost feel as though they understand the path that the products are going through right up until they're going to get delivered. Now, it's a busy place, so that's not always achievable, you know, every minute of the day. But I think our communication levels are high, our service levels are high, and our ideas and experiences are top notch.
And what do you know now that you wish you'd known when you started out or when you took over the reins?
I definitely think challenging that cost structure earlier would have been really good, but I think at that time I might have been in my, you know, early to mid 30s, so not necessarily the confidence to go out and tackle that sort of big challenge at that age, so, or earlier even. But the tackling of that cost structure or questioning what was going on in the business, maybe working on the business earlier, would have had that. It might not have done, but it might have had that effect, you know, several years earlier. But equally, it was a tough period of time for every business, so I couldn't have even said that that was definite.
And that's a really tough thing to do in any case. It's very tough for people to challenge that, and in small businesses to reduce staffing levels, and because you know of the effects that it will have on people. How many people work for the business now?
We're back up to, we've 7 people now. We're looking to recruit a new salesperson as quickly as we can. So we have the capacity, we have the demand. We're looking for someone to develop some new business again. So we're hoping to get up to 9. We've got an office move planned for this year. We're doing a soft rebrand as well. So there's quite a few projects that we're tackling.
Lots going on.
Definitely.
So the recruitment process is ongoing at the moment,
yes.
Is it?
Yes.
So, James, you better give your website address out so people can find a way of contacting you if they've got the right kind of skills and they're looking for a job.
That's right. It's steel-city.co.uk. Email address, sales@steel-city.co.uk.
Super. Well, James Biggin of Steel City Marketing, thanks very much for coming in today and telling us about what you've been through with the business and how you've taken on the reins and turned it around after it had gone through a tough period. We're going to play a track of music which you've chosen, which is Summertime, DJ Jazzy Jeff, and the Fresh Prince. Of course, we all know Will Smith. So we'll play that now. It's feeling like summertime here in the studio. James, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch. We're broadcasting on 93.2 FM and through sheffieldlive.org across Sheffield and the world. And that was Summertime, a nice summertime track, chosen by our first guest of today, James Biggin of Steel City Marketing. Now, regular listeners of the show will have heard our recent interviewee, Penny Raven, talking about Sheffield Soup, and I'm delighted to welcome Penny back to the studio today. Morning, Penny.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming in again. So, Sheffield Soup, well, it was exciting a few weeks ago, and it's even more exciting now.
I know.
It's coming up fast. Not long till Sheffield Soup launches. 29th of July is the key date, but there's another key date as well, which is next Friday, the 17th of July. Let's just recap. What is Sheffield Soup?
So, soup is micro grant funding. The difference is it's by Sheffield people for Sheffield people. So, someone in Sheffield can have an idea and it's either for their own benefit or for the benefit of the city. And people of Sheffield come along to an event, they make a minimum donation of £5 on the door, that buys them some soup, silversmith's soup, no less, and some bread, and great conversation, good networks, some fabulous music, which we'll be announcing in a minute, and a vote. And they go and They will listen to four pitches. Their favourite pitch, individually, the audience members go to a private booth, make their vote for their favourite idea, the one that they believe should receive the door money. The door money is then awarded to the winner for them to go away and make their idea a reality.
Fantastic endeavour. And it's really interesting how you've brought together the whole idea of individual crowdfunding for someone's own project, their business, their social enterprise, their own project, their own artistic project, or it could be for something for the good of the community, sort of neighbourhood civic crowdfunding that has become popular as well. Now, why did you decide to do both, put it all in one big, lovely bag?
There's actually a really good reason. So there is a lot of support from the council, from governments and from various institutions that will encourage some innovation or promote ideas or encourage people to set up a business. However, they'll be targeting a particular problem. So there's an element of box ticking required. For example, some will address groups of 18 to 25 year olds, others will address groups from a particular postcode. And my concern is what if you're 27 and you've got a great idea and you don't know where to go get that support? Or sometimes you've not got the feel like you've got the right background or the right experience, or if your idea's good enough. So this is a really safe place where you've got a room full of people, nearly 200 people, that are really supportive and want everyone to do well and will do what they can, if your idea is a good idea, to help make it happen.
So, safe place, supportive environment, and it's a way to get your idea to happen.
Yes.
Chosen by the people there on the night, on the day. Fantastic idea. Now, we talked about a couple of key dates. 29th July, it happens. But next Friday, the 17th of July, is it your actual deadline for applications?
That's right.
So what are you looking for? What do people need to do to apply?
So I've kept the application process really, really simple. We're not looking for business plans or smart presentations, just from the heart reasons. So first of all, what's the project idea? Who's it going to benefit? Why is it important to the individual? A brief description of what it is that needs to be done and how they're going to go about doing it. And it's really that simple, and that's an online application process.
And Penny, you've brought a couple of Sheffield legends here to the studio with you, involved in Sheffield Soup. We've got here in the studio, we have Chris and Ian, Chris Dams and Ian Anderson. Chris, Ian, great to have you here, and obviously great for Sheffield Soup that you were involved. First of all, on the music side, Chris, do you want to talk about your involvement and what people can expect?
Right, yes, hello there, thanks. Three of us, and we're called The Clear, and we're from Sheffield. And basically, Penny got in touch, and she basically asked us if we wanted to provide some entertainment on the night, or some gentle music, which is what we do. So we're going to be playing only just for about 15, 20 minutes, just a bit of an interlude, and we're just going to be playing some acoustic songs, so we do an acoustic thing where it's kind of three vocals in harmony and two acoustic guitars. That's one side of what we do. Yeah. We also do the thing where we do lots of bells and whistles and stuff. So that's what we're going to be doing for Sheffield Soup. And we did. It's a really good idea as well. And I think anybody from Ian will probably recognise this as well. Anybody from the kind of creative industries in Sheffield, as you asked your previous interview earlier, you know, what would you do differently if you could turn the clock back 10 years or 20 years or whatever, 5 years? And I think it's just a really good thing that people get that support, because people have the ideas. And me and Ian was just talking before we came in, and I was saying, you know, what surprises me in the music business side of things is, you know, you always think that the musicians are pretty out there and away with the fairies, you know, and I've come to realise that quite often the creative mind cuts straight through and see the idea, and then they go to the business people for all the support and stuff, and quite often the business people are just following rules and structures and stuff, and
yeah, so if it doesn't fit into the set way of doing things, then
and the thought is that the creatives are away with the fairies, and the business types have been to college and learnt how to put one in front of two or two in front of one, you know. And quite often, I think that they need each other.
Yeah.
So I think the soup idea will probably cross-pollinate and things like that.
There was a lovely book, it's probably 10 years ago now, written by someone called David Parrish, called T-Shirts and Suits, which was all about breaking down silos between creative and artistic and so-called traditional businesses. And it got quite a lot of attention at the time. And worth a look, anyone who's listening, worth picking up on that too, because that's a really interesting point that you made there.
Yeah. It's a cultural thing. Yeah. It's as bad as, you know, racism was in America in the 50s or whatever, you know. It's, you know, people are kind of lobotomised, you know what I mean, into you are this half of your brain and you're over there with your half of your brain and you do this and you do that. And quite often the business person can say to the creative, you need to do this. And quite often the creative could say to the business person, you need to do this. And but never the twain agree, really, you know.
Never the twain, indeed. Yeah. Ian, you're in the studio with us as well. Well-known name in Sheffield, well-known name across the world, of course, Ian Anderson. First of all, why have you got involved in Sheffield Soup? What was the catalyst for you?
I think there's two things that make it really attractive. The first one is there's always a sense of it's a very attractive thing, that, you know, power to the people and giving power back to people. So on that kind of romantic level, I think it works, and it's like a dragon's den with a heart and that sort of thing. That it's great TV watching people kind of getting knocked down for their ideas, but actually, kind of what you really want is someone to succeed. Yeah. And I think that the structure of Sheffield Soup is primarily geared to help people succeed where possible, as opposed to pulling the carpet from underneath them. And I think the other thing that I like about it is, We've all touched upon this thing of business, and it's not necessarily creative industries, but sort of, you know, business and being it's all about tick boxing. And I think there's a really strong analogy with banking, where you used to be able to kind of go to your bank manager who knew you and would be able to kind of give a good assessment of whether it would be the right thing for you to do to take an extra loan out or to get extra finance or whatever. And now it's all centralised, so that you're just filling in a form and the bank manager's job seems to be to put a stamp on the envelope and send it off to central office or something.
Send it off to central office where it's fed into a computer.
Exactly. And you know, and so the great thing about Sheffield Soup is it's really kind of going back to local knowledge and not local expertise, but just local knowledge. And so the idea is that there could be something happening, in any area. Let's say Sharrow, because that's, you know, where I live. Something happening in Sharrow that may not really satisfy all the business criteria that a funding agency would genuinely need to do. So it's not saying they're the big bad funding agency. They have certain criteria that they have to fulfil, and they have certain responsibilities that they have to follow, satisfy. But there may be an idea that someone has in Sharrow that isn't necessarily sustainable over a long period, but it doesn't need to be because it does its job over a short period. And it might be something that right there, right here, right now, right then, is something that the local people would really want, or not even need. They might just want it, and if they vote for that, then that's an interesting thing. And if it doesn't sort of some stories that Penny told me about different soups, you know, around the world, you know, have been really big success stories in a kind of an objective kind of way, but some of them are success stories in very subjective ways for that local community, and all they've done really is to inspire something else to happen. You're really funding a catalyst for something bigger, and that's what it should be. It shouldn't have to be, this is a business that's going to last 25 years.
No, make something happen, and sometimes it's about making something happen for a summer or for a, you know, one day.
That's precisely it. Make something happen. Yeah. Make a change. Make a difference.
Yeah,
and that's really all you need.
Well, it is a lovely example of, as you've said, people making things happen, and rather than rather than inertia, actually just getting on, doing something and choosing. And the sort of civic element, the civic crowdfunding, if you like, is a way of describing it, but civic crowdfunding in real time.
I think it's something that people, you know, they like. People are always saying they want to have more say, and this gives people an opportunity. You know, the general public, or, you know, you just have to show up, you know, and enjoy the evening, and then you get a say.
Yeah.
And it's that simple, really. So in some ways, the potential for Sheffield Soup, I think, is that initially there needs to be interaction and support from the business community, because obviously that's kind of where the money is, and that's at the end of the day, things do need funding. It's no good, just you can't survive on a round of applause. But I think the potential is that loads of people can just go down, because it's only a fiver, and that's kind of and it's a clear vote, and it's a vote about something you care about, not just having to go down to a polling station and vote about something that kind of you don't feel that you have any influence on.
You can get directly involved. And it's interesting, on this programme, week in, week out, we have businesses and social enterprises of all sizes, from very, very large to absolutely tiny, and very, very traditional businesses that you wouldn't necessarily feel had a social purpose, but they come in and they talk about things that they're doing, and you think, gosh, I didn't know that. That's amazing. You have really, really embedded values that are really, really, but, well, they're driven by people, of course. And there are so many businesses here in Sheffield who clearly do have very, very strong community values, as well as all the social enterprises. There are lots of what we might term traditional businesses. And so many have come on this programme and talked about their particular favourite community projects that they support. And it's a big thing here in the city, isn't it? It's a big thing in the business community to actually get involved and make positive things happen in Sheffield as well. So as you say, businesses need to be part of it and get involved, as well as us all as individuals making things happen.
Yeah. I think so. I think that we've dealt with small labels in Sheffield right up to working for 4 or 5 years on global branding projects with Coca-Cola in Atlanta. And people ask, what's it like working with with Coca-Cola? But there is no such thing as Coca-Cola. There's only the people that you work with there, and they have values and they have families, and they aren't all evil kind of money grabbing things. And the same across other businesses. And I think that's the danger, is if you start to see businesses as faceless entities, then that's what they'll become. But if you always try to deal with the people there and see what their interests are.
Yes,
that's how it moves forward.
Yeah, person to person. Yeah. So really exciting, Sheffield Soup, 29th of July. If you want to apply, the deadline is the 17th of July, so apply now. Find out more now. Penny, do you want to give out the address? People can contact you on Twitter, on the website. I've got it up in front of me. But
Okay, so the website's real easy. It's sheffieldsoup.com. And on Twitter, it's Chef Soup, SHEFF. At Chef Soup. And we're on Facebook. If you just search on Google for Sheffield Soup, there'll be lots of different ways to get in touch, including the Eventbrite link.
Wonderful. So take a look, apply, go along on the 29th of July. Enjoy it, and crucially, get involved. Absolutely get involved. So thanks ever so much, Penny, for coming back to the studio, and thanks for bringing Chris and Ian with you. Chris, thanks for coming.
Thank
you too. We're going to play a track of music now, a track from Chris's band, The Clear, and the track is America. You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch. We're broadcasting on 93.2 FM. And from SheffieldLive.org across Sheffield and the world. It's Friday the 10th of July, and we've just played a track of music by Chris Dams's band, The Clear. The track was America. But you can find out more about Chris's fantastic band. Chris, can you give out a website where people can find out more about The Clear?
Yes, sure. It's just simply theclear.co.uk.
Super. Well, thanks for coming in today, and I hope you really enjoy Sheffield Soup, and I'm sure the audience will enjoy hearing you play live as
well. Thank you.
Ian Anderson, thanks also for joining me today. Good. And people can get in touch with you these days. How? What's the best way of doing that?
Well, you can go to thedesignersrepublic.com or find out what we're up to on Facebook, Twitter, at ENTDR. Or just hang around and you'll spot us.
Go to Sheffield Soup. Super, thanks, Ian. And Penny, thanks very much for coming back in. Loads more we could talk about in terms of Sheffield Soup. I'm sure we'll follow up on the event itself on this programme. So, listeners, stay tuned. But more importantly, get involved. Go down on the 29th of July. Quick reminder of the website details again, Penny.
It's www.sheffieldsoup.com.
Soup.
And the Super. Location as well of the event.
Yeah, location yes. being announced.
Yes, we've got a venue. It's the Print House, which is North Church Street.
Fantastic. You heard it here first.
The old Tulip Lounge, isn't it?
That's it, yeah.
Superb. Penny, Chris, Ian, thank you. Thanks for joining me
thank
today.
Thank you.
So, landlords, rapacious or simply taking advantage of the market? We found out more by talking to a self-styled responsible landlord last week, Russell from Home Team. And asked him about his business, Property Partners and Home Team. So I'm joined now by Russell Short, founder director of Crooks-based Property Partners and Home Team. Russell, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How about
good.
You?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
Good, good. So you first moved to Sheffield to study urban regeneration in the city.
I did, yes. I actually moved up to Barnsley in my first year. I didn't do too well in that year, I have to admit. So I moved over to Sheffield and studied urban regeneration. Fantastic course run by Sheffield Hallam just across the road. Brilliant course and yeah, came out with a good degree at the back of it.
So what about your time at Sheffield then? Did you enjoy it? What made you stay here and make your home here?
Sheffield's just been an amazing place from start to finish. It's a really friendly place. We all know it as a bit of a village. Everybody seems to know each other. We were talking just before and there was a few people that we've got in association that we know. You know, since leaving university, I met my wife at the time and it's just been a good city to me. Can't see any reason why I'd want to leave.
It's got a huge retention rate in terms of students who come here wanting to stay.
I think it's the most in the UK, to be fair.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, and you founded a couple of businesses, Property Partners and Home Team. Can you tell us a little bit about your businesses and your story about setting those up? Because it's an interesting story. First, before setting those up, you worked in varied careers, call centre, finance, recruitment. What led you to the decision to set up your own business?
To be honest, I had a few jobs that, like you say, call centre, etc. I then went to work for a company called Smart Engine, run by a chap called Matthew Smith, a real entrepreneur. He'd set up various businesses. He kind of showed me how to set up a business, how to run a business. And funnily enough, I'd gone away climbing up into northern Spain, and it was just a wake-up call. It literally was a light bulb moment where I thought, well, I've earned a lot of money for other companies. It's about time I stood on my own two feet and launched my own business. I have to be honest, at the time, I didn't really know what I was going to do. So I knew it was going to be property. But I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to go about it. But anyway, left Smart Engine. Within 2 or 3 weeks, I started looking around for properties that I could potentially buy and refurbish. I didn't really have any money. So what I did, in the end, we found a property in Dinnington. Very, very cheap. Very cheap. And I bought it with 2 credit cards. And that's literally how I got started. I sold my Audi, which was my car at the time. I used that money to refurb the property. And then I managed to sell it with a profit. And that is literally how I got started.
So this was something, you put your skin in the game, if you like. You took the risk with your own money from selling your car and borrowed money as well. And obviously you were in the right place at the right time. Now, that's not saying, oh, it's all down to luck. There's a very good quote, isn't there, about the harder I work, the luckier I get. But it was, obviously, the right deal. You were able to buy something as a doer-upper. You were able to do it up. You were able to make money on it. Now, is it always that easy?
Absolutely not, no. during that period, okay, so we had a few good deals and back-to-back, but then we did have a few problem properties where we didn't actually make any money. We've lost money on several property deals. So you're right, we've had an element of luck, and luckily we got the got myself to a stage where we could afford to probably take a few more risks and, you know, afford to just iron out those kind of losses. But generally speaking, we've always made a profit during that period. And, you know, I started off as a one-man band. Now I've got 10 people working for me and various subcontractors that all work for us. But, yeah, probably one of the worst deals I ever made. I bought an off-plan apartment in Bulgaria. I thought it was going to be a safe deal, and I lost 30-odd thousand pounds on it. You know, you don't want to be doing that every day.
You do not want to be doing that every day, no. But overall, you've generally increased your... Well, you've increased your portfolio. You have a large portfolio now, and you've obviously learned from the deals that didn't go so well, and... To create a positive asset class, a positive portfolio for yourself. Now, what about the property collapse since 2008? How's that affected businesses such as yours?
Well, to be perfectly honest, when you're as a landlord, there's always a rental market there. People need to rent property. The private rented sector is, you know, it's a big part of the housing market in the UK. So it didn't, on the rental side of the business, it didn't have a huge negative impact because our properties were still being let, our tenants were still paying the rent. Admittedly, defaults in rent did increase because people were struggling a little bit to meet their rental demands. However, having said that, at the time, we did have a couple of other companies. We had a mortgage company, which we had to close down pretty sharpish. We also had an investment company that we sold property deals on to other investors and other landlords. Because the mortgage market had closed, it just all the finance available for people who wanted to buy had disappeared literally overnight. So we had to cut the fold that company. So, you know, yes, we've managed to survive it, but it hasn't been an easy run.
No, quite. And as you say, you have to be able to react. You have to be flexible as well to the market conditions.
Yeah.
So you're now... The portfolio is now about a £6.5 million portfolio, is that about right?
That's about right, yeah.
And retaining about 55 properties at the moment.
That's about right, yeah.
Now, would you say you're a good landlord?
Absolutely. We set up Property Partners to manage our own portfolio. We do all our own maintenance in-house, so if a house needs a refurbishment, a kitchen, bathroom, etc., we're always there on hand to do that. Minor repairs, we'll obviously try and get those done as quickly as possible so that the tenants are happy. And generally looking after the well-being of tenants. At the end of the day, we, as a landlord, you're providing a service, a product, if you like, for your tenants. If they're not happy, then they will move on. So it's in your best interest as a good landlord to provide them with a good product. Don't get me wrong, there are certain tenants who abuse that situation. So on the flip side, quite often we get houses that have been completely destroyed by tenants. They are few and far between, thank goodness. But that is a cost then to the landlord. But generally speaking, yes.
Indeed. And the flip side is there will be other landlords who do not take their responsibilities seriously, and that must be frustrating for you if the other landlords affect the reputation of the private landlord sector.
Absolutely. There's always been slum landlords. They've been in the press day in, day out, and they really bring down the reputation of most landlords. It's a very small sector of the marketplace, but it's the one that the media focus on. It's the one where we see the Panorama investigations, etc. We do come across them as an agency. People come to us saying they want their properties being let and managed. When we go to inspect them, they're not up to standard. They won't pass any of the safety checks, which are obviously built into the landlord's side of things. So yes, they do bring down the reputation. But I think as a whole, the private rented sector is actually pretty good, and the quality is always increasing. Government are always bringing in new regulation to further improve the property portfolios of many landlords, but arguably the slum landlord will always be there.
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch. We're broadcasting on 93.2 FM. That was part of an interview recorded with Russell Short of Property Partners and Home Team. Russell's an interesting character, a successful landlord here in Sheffield, and he was talking about his background, studying urban regeneration, moving into business and growing a property portfolio. As you've heard, he was talking about being a responsible landlord, and he was talking about regulations. Now, regulations change in business all the time. The effect of the budget that we've heard this week means that the housing sector will be affected as well. We're going to return to that next week. So stay tuned. If you've got a view, you can contact this show. If you want to hear the whole of the interview that we've recorded with Russell, you can find it on my website, jamieveitch.co.uk. But turning now to another pre-recorded interview. Last week, I met up with Olishola McKenzie, who's a creative director of a social enterprise here in Sheffield called Learn to Recreate. And I met with her and some of her trainees. We're going to play part of the interview with Olishola now.
So I'm joined now by Olishola McKenzie, the creative director of Learn to Recreate Limited. Olishola, good morning.
Good morning, Jamie. How are you today?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm well, thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for joining me today. And your business is a fantastic and really interesting, innovative social enterprise. Tell us more about it.
Well, Learn to Recreate Limited has been going for almost 4 years now. We offer fashion and textiles training programs, ranging from textile crafts, skills where people can come and learn how to make things like cushion covers. They can learn how to make lampshades and also learn how to upcycle clothing and sew garments. We also actually go into the technical side of garment construction, which is pattern drafting to industry standards and garment construction to industry standard, and that's pretty much what we do at Learn to Recreate.
And where did the idea for the business come from? Was this always your passion?
This has always been my passion. When I was a teenager, I would sketch. Even though my sketches were horrible, I still sketch them anyway, but I never had any technical skills to make, and I did go into studying something completely different. I studied geography. I have 2 degrees in geography and worked as a research analyst, but I got to that point in my career where I thought it was time to actually follow my passion. So I resigned and studied fashion and textiles, and this is what's led me to starting up my own business.
And you've been going now for 4 years, as you mentioned.
Almost four years.
So you must have been through all sorts of challenges as well as all sorts of celebratory moments. What's been the most exciting thing that's happened in the business?
I would say that the most exciting thing is a bit more personal, really. It's been when I have seen learners come through a program and come out the other end and succeeded and achieved. And basically what I mean by that is just a learner completing a program and saying that they have actually got something from it, that has been very rewarding. Personally, it has been very rewarding.
And going back then to challenges, what about the challenges that you've faced and how have you overcome those?
We have had many challenges at Learn to Recreate. We've had ups and downs, financial, mainly of a financial nature, and perseverance is something that I'll say that has stood us in good stead, just persevering and just kind of knocking on several doors, because I find that even when it's a problem that's of a financial nature, there is still a way to get around and get over that, and speaking to people, having good relationships always helps. That's with your landlords, with people, other people that might be investors, and that's been our story, really, being very honest and open and good, having good relationships with all these people I have mentioned.
So relationships and maintaining those relationships, yes, absolutely crucial.
Yes.
Great. So we brought into the studio today a number of people who have been involved and are involved in Learn to Recreate. I don't know who would like to go first in terms of how it's working in terms of getting involved and what you're getting out of it.
Right. I'm Sarah Frost. I went on a Lucilla's sewing and selling course. Since then, I've been on a business course, how to run a small business. I've set up my own company called Inspirals Learning, the idea being that people work with their hands to touch their inner creativity, and I run what I call workshops for well-being. The other half is that I still do my stuff. I still do my ceramics. But recently, since the Lucilla's course, I have set up an Etsy shop selling handmade cushions and aprons.
So Alicia's business has given you, Sarah, the confidence and the skills to do that, is that right?
Yes, it has. I've also upcycled a few garments myself and done my own alterations on clothing.
Excellent, that's great. So how was it that you found out about Alicia and learned to recreate?
My vicar from St Mark's Church mentioned there was this learn to recreate a sewing and selling course that would be just right for me, and she was right, it was.
We'll return then to your business in a moment, Sarah, and people can find out more. We'll give a mention of your Etsy shop as well.
Thank you.
But we have a number of other learners and a number of other people have been involved here in the studio. Again, I'd like to hear a little bit more about what you've got out of being involved.
My name is Mala Noji, and I have come from Nigeria on the ticket of the Commonwealth to study pattern cutting and garment construction at Learn to Recreate. I have been here for almost 2 months now, and it's been quite rewarding because I have learned some technical skills, you know, on garment construction, which will be very useful when I get back to my home country, Nigeria.
So you're enjoying the process and enjoying the skills. And again, where did you find out about the Lucia's course and about Learn to Recreate?
Okay, I found out about Lucia's Learn to Recreate while I was in my home country. From a professor in my department.
Great stuff. Now, again, a number of ranges of perspective here would be really interesting.
My name is Helen Sui. I'm a Chinese. I went to the sewing and selling classes. I just want to build up my confidence and skill, hopefully. In the later day, I can have my own business.
Superb. So by getting involved, you're building skills, you're building confidence.
Yeah. And more enjoying it.
And enjoying it too. And what's coming across here is that enjoyment, the sense of enjoyment and involvement from everybody. Do you want to tell?
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org across Sheffield and the world. My name's Jamie Veitch. That was an interview recorded last week with Olishola McKenzie, the creative director of social enterprise Learn to Recreate, and with a number of trainees who've been actively involved in her courses. You can hear the full, complete interview where we return to Olishola and talk a little bit more about challenges faced by social enterprises, how to overcome them, and the next direction for the business on my website, jamieveitch.co.uk. But it's time to wrap up today. On today's show, we've had Russell Short of Property Partners and Home Team. We've had Olishola McKenzie, as just mentioned. We've had James Behan of Steel City Marketing. And we've had Penny Raven talking about Sheffield Soup with Chris Dams of The Clear and Ian Anderson of The Designers Republic. We'll be back next week talking about the budget and the impact on social enterprises and businesses. So tune in for that. But don't go away right now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, from 10 a.m. through to noon. So please stay tuned for that. And thanks for listening today. We'll be back next week. Thanks also to our sound engineer today, Sangeeta, who's been in the studio with me. And thank you for listening. We're going to play out with a track of music, which is Paul Weller's The Changing Man.